You're listening to In Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Damschroeder. My guest today is Jerry Austin, who you might think of as the sly old fox of Ohio Democratic politics. Jerry managed the successful campaigns of former Governor Richard F. Celeste, and he was the campaign manager for Jesse Jackson's presidential bid in 1988. Jerry joins us today just back from Des Moines, where he observed the debacle of the Iowa caucus. Jerry, President Trump immediately took to Twitter to link the caucus chaos to Democratic governance in general. Is the Iowa impression going to last?
Well, first of all, you have to separate the debacle for the count. There was no debacle in terms of the actual conducting of the caucuses. They went smoothly, and what happened afterwards is what the great debacle was. There's always a call for an end to the Iowa caucuses every 4 years. Whether there's, incidences like happened last night, of course, never happened before. But I don't know that they're going to ever do away with the Iowa caucuses because in 4 years from now, if Donald Trump is reelected, there will be a need for an Iowa caucus for Democrats and Republicans. And if a Democrat wins, there won't be probably any Iowa caucus for the Democrats, but the Republicans will want to have one. So this is a dual thing for the state of Iowa and also for the Democrat and Republican parties. The real criticism of the Iowa caucuses, especially last night, is that in almost all states that have primaries, they are run by the Secretary of State and election officials. The caucuses are run by party officials. There's a big difference.
You know, Bernie Sanders supporters are convinced that they actually won the Iowa caucus in 2016 and were shortchanged by the Democratic establishment on the vote count. Now a vote reporting app developed by Hillary Clinton staffers and Pete Buttigieg contributors is really causing them a lot of consternation over what they're describing as a rigged process. Are the same party splits that occurred the last cycle starting to take root again in 2020?
Well, the interesting thing is that the only numbers that count are the numbers of how many delegates each candidate won. And what people forget is that what happened on Tuesday night was a precinct caucus. Those folks that are chosen at the precinct caucus then go to a county caucus, then go to a state caucus. And so the actual number of delegates that will be assigned to each candidate won't be known until June. The Sanders people complained last time that the votes that should have been counted were A, how many people showed up for each candidate, B, how many people showed up for each candidate when they did reconciliation, and C, how many delegates each candidate received. Well, the only important number there is how many delegates each candidate received. The other two are irrelevant once you get to signing delegates. And what happened was that all that went smoothly at the caucus, but afterwards they had to send in the results with, three different numbers, and the app didn't work. And the people who created the app and the party people never tested the app, even though they claimed that they had backup upon backup upon backup, and, of course, it turns out that they didn't. And how they handled this, the party people, and the fact that they kept the name of the firm that developed the app secret, and the firm's name was Shadow, all leads to people scratching their heads wondering, what's going on here. And the fact is that this will die down in a couple of days because New Hampshire now becomes in play, and New Hampshire is probably more important now than it was before Tuesday because there's so many questions about the Iowa results.
Well, let's forget about the results for now and just give me your take on former Vice President Joe Biden, because before any campaigning took place in Iowa, he had a solid lead there. After campaigning, he was behind the mayor of South Bend and an avowed socialist. So it looks like when voters take the time to look at the 2020 version of Joe Biden, they don't particularly like what they're seeing.
Well, keep in mind that Bernie Sanders was running for president for the second time, and the first time he ran was 4 years ago. Elizabeth Warren, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, et al. Were all running for the first time. Joe Biden was running, I think, for the fourth time. And the last time he ran was 32 years ago, and he dropped out before the Iowa caucuses. So just because he was widely known, to a great deal of the populace who were turned out on Tuesday night, he was somebody they may have read about and heard about, but he wasn't a player in their mind the same way all the other people were. And everybody forgets that Biden entered this, you know, fairly late compared to the other people who've been there for a year or two. And it didn't surprise me that he came in fourth. There was even a chance that Klobuchar could beat him. Now, he's got a problem. If he only wins South Carolina of the first four, and he doesn't win South Carolina by, you know, 20 points like he's been reported to, he's in trouble. And Bloomberg is sitting on the sideline smacking his lips, because his whole strategy is that he goes up when Biden goes down. He becomes the alternative.
So talking about Mike Bloomberg here, the billionaire businessman who won the mayor's office in New York City as a Republican, and as you say, pouring millions into advertising for the later Democratic primaries where he thinks he can overpower a weak field, is Bloomberg as a former Republican a threat to take the Democratic nomination for president?
Well, he's been everything. He's a former Republican, independent, and Democrat. He's a man for all seasons and all parties. The fact of the matter that it's all about the Benjamins. And he's got, you know, unlimited amount of money. If he drops $1 billion, he's still got $49 billion left. But I don't think anybody cares about that. I mean, you have some people who are trying to buy this. But so are all the candidates. They're raising money to do what? To buy it, to communicate with you, to get you to vote for them. So what's the difference? He's just spending his own money.
Other than Bloomberg, the campaigns are in New Hampshire, where the nation's first actual primary election's going to be held. With the Iowa news being on process and the Trump State of the Union and Trump impeachment vote holding attention, it doesn't feel like New Hampshire's getting the attention it normally does. If Sanders wins there again, as he did in 2016, does it even matter, Jerry?
Oh, yeah, I think it matters. Well, one of the things that came out of Tuesday night was that Trump, you know, was a winner Tuesday night. He had the Iowa, you know, caucus debacle. He had the State of the Union on Tuesday night, and on Wednesday he gets acquitted. You know, not a bad week. But all attention would now come to New Hampshire. The question isn't just about who wins, it's about how close it is. So if Bernie winds up winning or comes in second, and, you know, it's about how close it is. The thing about Iowa, the story about Iowa, if we didn't have to deal with the craziness of the count, is Buttigieg. I mean, this is a guy who comes out of nowhere, mayor of a town that's, you know, smaller than O'Hare Airport, and he won.
You expect to see many campaigns pack it up as a lost cause after New Hampshire? Who's at the make or break moment now?
Well, first of all, you know this, that you get out of the campaign, we don't have any more money because you don't want to go into debt. And so I would imagine that anybody that, you know, comes out of New Hampshire and does poorly is not going to be able to raise any money to fight on Super Tuesday and beyond. So, you know, you're looking at the Yangs, the Klobuchars. The publisher is the only one that's really a potential player here. But Warren has money to go on, and Bernie has money to go on, and Buttigieg has money to go on. And Biden could have a problem because he's had a problem raising money to begin with, and people are not willing to give money when, you know, he isn't doing well. I mean, I know that the people who were involved with his PAC were making phone calls on Monday to potential contributors, and most of the contributors said, "He'll call me back tomorrow. Let's see how he does Monday night." Well, they called back the next day. I don't think they were very successful in raising money.
You know, the State of the Union speech really stressed minority unemployment statistics, and the Trump reelection commercial in the Super Bowl did the very same thing. So it's obvious the president is trying to break the Democratic base of minority voters, just as he did with blue-collar voters who used to be Democratic majorities. Are you concerned, Jerry, that the minority vote will move to the Trump camp, at least in numbers unseen by other Republicans?
No, they're not going to move to the Trump camp. That's not really what his goal is. His goal is to keep him at home. I mean, he's not stupid enough to think that he's going to get this mass vote among the minority community. He's trying to keep him at home.
Well, the Republican strength in the suburbs has definitely declined, so voter movement obviously works both ways. Which Democrat has the best chance to take the suburbs that used to be the base of the Republican Party?
Well, we're talking here on the Thursday or Wednesday after the first caucus. Ask me that question in a couple of months, because this is all fluid right now. And since we're talking here about the future, is there a possibility that the Democrats could have a broken convention? We haven't had one since 1952. I think it's possible. I think you could see after Super Tuesday, Bloomberg a player and Bernie a player, and maybe one other person like Pete, and nobody runs away with this and goes to the convention with enough votes to win in the first ballot. Second ballot, as you know, the delegates are not pledged to the candidate, and 700 superdelegates vote, who are all politicians, and all running for re-election for the Congress and some of the Senate. And I would find it really hard to believe that they would be Bernie supporters.
So, I mean, wouldn't their decision be very much based on who they think would do the best in the suburbs? Because when the Republicans control Congress, it was with control of the suburbs. As the Democrats have taken control of the House, it's literally winning in suburban districts, replacing Republicans that held those seats. So, I mean, if you just reading the tea leaves with professional politicians who often turn to you for advice, who would be the strongest option for that vote?
Well, the reason I'm not answering your question, John, is because you asked me this question, on February 5th. it's irrelevant what I think on February 5th. When it gets to the point where it becomes relevant, hopefully what the Democrats at the convention and going to the convention will be committed to is who is the best candidate to beat Donald Trump. Forget about issues. It's who is the best candidate to beat Donald Trump. And I think that everybody believes that Bernie Sanders is not the best candidate to beat Donald Trump. Not Sanders supporters, here's the commercial that you'll see if Sanders is a nominee. A voiceover over a picture of Niagara Falls. When you got married, did you have a honeymoon in Niagara Falls or St. Thomas or Hawaii? Well, Bernie Sanders had his honeymoon in Moscow, not Moscow, Idaho, Moscow, Russia.
Pretty powerful.
Well, you don't have to be a genius to figure that one out. And with Trump trying to, keep the spotlight off of him and his Russia stuff, we all know about that. But here's something that a lot of people don't know about. And imagine that commercial coming on. You know they're going to do it. But the other thing is, it's not just about who can beat Trump. It's who's got the money to compete. Bloomberg, looks better and better and better when you start factoring in the money, because he's got unlimited resources, can match anything Trump raises and the Republicans raise, and is willing to spend it. Remember, he's 77. He ain't running again if he doesn't win now. And this is why he's running. And he's not going to spend his money on himself if he can't win a nomination, but he will spend money on helping candidates win around the country and against Trump, or whoever the nominee is.
Do you think
Bloomberg's a major player here?
Do you agree with his message? I mean, is he on target with the Mike can get it done as a message?
Well, that's the closing line, and the important thing to me is, you're asking me questions. Let me ask you a question. Since 2016, how many young people have registered to vote, meaning that this will be their first presidential election in 2020? They may have registered in 2017, they may have voted in 2018, but the first time they vote for president is in 2020. How many do you think there are nationally?
I don't know, Jerry. I think there's...
19 million. 19 million. 1.1 million in Ohio. 1.1 million in Michigan and Pennsylvania.
Now,
2.6 million in Florida.
From
this
the...
is John, this is not eligible. They are registered.
Yeah, well, here's the interesting thing on the polling of the young people. A very significant percentage of them, somewhere over 50%, oppose capitalism as a structure of our economy. They believe capitalism is corrupt.
John,
so the billionaire businessman.
Any poll among young people is fallacious, and I'll tell you why. The demographic that they use is 18 to 29-year-olds. 18 to 29-year-olds. So don't you think that somebody approaching 29 has a lot different view of issues than somebody who's 18?
Very different.
There should be a poll of 18 to 21-year-olds of the first-time voters. Let's see what these first-time voters think about capitalism, et cetera. I mean, the fact of the matter is that I've seen a lot of these young people who are so enamored with the issues. And my message to them is, My Donald Trump, when I was their age, was Richard Nixon. And when people my age got involved with George McGovern and thought, the guy's the nominee, we're going to win. Did we know that at the time Nixon and his dirty tricksters were making sure Ed Muskie was not the nominee of the Democratic Party because he'd be more formidable? No. So, we went out and we thought we were going to win and we got killed. In 2000, a lot of these young people who fed up with Gail Gore or Clinton, went for Ralph Nader. Last time, they went for the Green Party or whatever. I mean, if you want that 4 more years of Donald Trump, that's going to be your choice. You can sit it out, or you can hold your nose and vote for whoever the Democrat is. But you think that they're not socialist enough, or you think they're too much of a capitalist?
You think Ohio's still going to be a battleground, or has that key state status passed us by?
Well, in many people's minds, it's not a battleground because, as you know, whenever in the last, I don't know how many years, 20, 30 years, whether a Democrat or Republican won Ohio, it's usually 3 or 4 points. Well, Trump won by 8, which is huge. But a lot of the people that voted for him don't have the same issues in 2020, meaning Hillary Clinton's not the nominee, and Trump has been president for 3 years. It isn't about what he's going to do. He already has a record. And the cardinal principle in politics is when you run against an incumbent in the city council or president of the United States, you run against them based on their record. Here's what he said he'd do, and here's what he would do. And a lot of those people have bias remorse. All of them, no. But, those people that were told not to sell their homes in Youngstown, but they was going to open up the steel mills and the car plants and the coal mines. They have a reason to vote no. But there are groups that are Trump cultists. They're not voting to anybody else but Trump, no matter what. That's why I go back to the kids, because if you're going to try to convince people who voted for Trump last time, except the folks who have buyer's remorse this time, that's a waste of time. Why are you doing subtraction? Why don't you do addition? Addition is concentrating on the kids.
Now, as soon as the presidential race is over, the Ohio statewide elections of 2022 come on the horizon for the Democrats, as the GOP has all the statewide offices and they'll be running incumbents. So it's the Democrats that are going to have to go out in 2021 and build support and begin making a case for change in Ohio. Who, in your opinion, makes sense for Ohio Democrats from a statewide perspective?
I don't have an opinion on that because, in Ohio, very rarely, except when it's a Democratic governor, does a governor ever get beat midterm. I mean, I'm sorry, get beat for a second term. Obviously, Gilligan, Strickland. Remember, it's a long time ago, but Celeste won both terms with a Republican in the White House. If a Democrat wins the White House, there's an interest in Ohio and finding a candidate and money in there a lot different than if the Democrat doesn't win, of course. But, the Democrats haven't done a very good job of building up a farm team where there are obvious people that should be running here. But, you know, it's a big year, 22, because of all the statewide are running, including Senator Portman.
Do the potential Ohio Democratic candidates still reach out and seek your counsel on how to win Ohio? And if so, what do you tell them are the keys?
Well, no, nobody's reaching out to me. I'm an old man now. I don't know social networks and all that other kind of stuff that they're doing now. I just knew that, you know, when I was doing this, if somebody spit in my face and until it was raining, that it's war. And I don't know if these folks now understand the kind of wars we fought in Ohio, because for a Democrat to win in Ohio, you know, you have to win the war.
And the ammunition is the message, isn't it? I mean, the social networks are the transmission mechanism, but I mean, bottom line is you have to have something to say. What would you tell them?
The thing that the people vote upon is their own lot in life. You know, I mean, Ronald Reagan had it right. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And that applies every 4 years, whether you're running for governor or running for president. So, you know, what's the answer to that? If everything is fine, then, you know, usually vote for an incumbent. We missed a big chance in 2018 because there was a scandal going on, which for some reason Mr. Cordray did not even talk about, the ECOD scandal. And when Democrats have been successful over the last 30 to 40 years, excluding Salas, there was a scandal with Strickland one, and it was a scandal when Gilgan won. So, you know, if there's going to be a scandal in 2022 and a Democrat, you know, wants to take advantage of it, they got a shot at winning.
Well, there's a scandal in the pension system.
Well, I mean, I know that's a big issue to you. And, you know, the thing is that the candidate, you know, whoever it is, a Democrat, has got to understand that and understand, you know, what these kinds of issues are. I mean, it's a lie to me. You know, ECOT was a lot easier to understand than the pension issue. Not that the pension issue is difficult, but ECOT was pretty easy because it affected everybody who lived any place in Ohio because they lived in a school district. And you never saw one spot on ECOT. Not one.
Yeah, it was kind of polite. Jerry, thank you for sharing your insight on Ohio and national politics shaped by experience as a longtime strategist who's been right at the center of the process, both nationally and in Ohio. And I'm sure everyone who hears this will have a better gauge for judging the political process in 2020. So thanks again, Jerry Austin.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Sean.
Will do.